What is up? Welcome back to the second episode of the week, fourth, sixth, something episode of season three and a half, four and a half, who knows? My name's Elliot Lane, host of Benzinga Cannabis Insider. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Thanks to producer Aaron Thomas for making this all work. We are sans Javier Hasse today. He is on vacation, well-deserved. That man is the backbone of Benzinga Cannabis content. And really, Benzinga Cannabis, we love him. I hope his vacation is very slow, but he will be back with us next week. So if you're tired of my face, of my voice, of my amazing eyeballs, and no, I'm kidding, if you're tired of that, we'll have both of us back next week. But y'all, exciting, exciting update. So we're going to start with this. We'll dive into some news. And we have two amazing interviews today. CEO of PedalFast, brand builder Jason Vygotsky is going to be with us. And then CEO and founder of Willow Industries, one of the coolest, innovative, kind of ancillary technology companies out there on the equipment side. It's going to be really fun to chat with these two today. I'm super excited about that. We have a new channel fully dedicated to Benzinga Cannabis. I am so excited. The opportunities are flowing in my mind. So here's what's happening. This will now be streamed live on Benzinga Cannabis YouTube channel. You can always listen to this after the fact on Apple, on Spotify, on any podcast hosting platform. I think we stream on Benzinga Cannabis Twitter and LinkedIn as well. That being said, what this channel does for us is the opportunity to bring in new content to you. So here's what I want you guys to do. Change agent, JM, welcome on YouTube, on LinkedIn. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Tell us what content you want, who you want to hear from. Do you want to hear from investors? Do you want to hear from marketers? Do you want to hear from the public relations side or the investor relations side? Do you want to hear from CEOs? So we are building this to build a full channel of cannabis content for you guys. And let's build it from the ground up with you. Tell us what you want. Cannabis Hour at Benzinga.com. Elliot Lane at Benzinga.com. I'm always open to hearing from you all. And we want to hang. We want to make sure that you guys get what you want. So that being said, you're on a new channel now, Benzinga Cannabis on the YouTube every Tuesday and Thursday at 4 Eastern time. So that said, y'all, what's happening in the world today? All right. Well, I got two words for you. Pot Mafia. That's right. I said it. Pot Mafia. I said it this morning on Cannabis Daily, but y'all, it makes me think of the movie The Gentleman. It makes me think of Matthew McConaughey. I'm a big fan. I think Matthew McConaughey is listening to all my podcasts, so appreciate it, Matt. But that being said, New York State Sheriff says there are around 13 to 1,400 unlicensed pot shops, and what they're going to do to crack down on that is hit the distribution and delivery network. So that, to me, it means it's organized, right? It's got to be organized to some extent. I mean, what do you think? Do you think there's some organized pot mafia happening in the Northeast? I like to, you know, grandize things here and say absolutely. But again, that's not proven nor is it a thing quite yet. But I am very interested to see where this goes. However, welcome to the new millennium, New York City and New York's Sheriff Department, in cracking down on some of this to make the New York market actually valuable and worthwhile. So that being said, a couple more stock news to look at. What's up, Mitchell? Thank you for joining, man. Much appreciated. Terrasen and Wana team up for New Jersey. They are going to bring the Wana brand edibles and all of their wonderful, wonderful empire of cannabis products to the New Jersey market through Jason Wild's company there. So that's thrilling. Outside of that, Flora Growth Company finishes their acquisition of Franchise Global Health Corp. Terrasen, of course, OTC listed TRSSF, Flora Growth Corp, FLGC on the NASDAQ. They now have access to some 1,200 pharmacies in the largest market in the European Union, which is Germany, of course. So that being said, oh, we got some cool, some legal insights. Always good. German government moving forward on decriminalization legislation. No more going into the bushes in the park. That's what you think, change agent. No, I'm just kidding. I absolutely agree. We want to touch on the global cannabis community here. And we are definitely doing that. Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We have hello from New York. We have it from everywhere today, y'all. Thank you for tuning in. Subscribe to the Benzinga Cannabis channel on YouTube. So that being said, what else is happening? Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board is set to open up applications for at least 44 new social equity retail cannabis licenses in March. I think we have another 56 licenses being released in New Jersey. We are seeing some more access here, and it's very encouraging. Some stock news that may not be super positive. I mean, we've dealt with that a lot over the last year. I'm here with you. I'm your therapist through all this. Glass half full, Elliot is here for you. But that being said, Columbia Care makes about 25% corporate cut. And a layoff there. They are not immune to that trend. Of course, we talked about Tilray earlier this week, also fired some 49 workers and downsized a Portugal facility. But Columbia Care is somewhat expected, right? We knew they were going to downsize. We knew they were going to, offload some of their assets before this acquisition. Cresco Labs didn't want some of their assets. So they sold, and they are selling, and they are going ahead and cutting headcount. Yeah, to really become profitable and make this acquisition as worthwhile as possible, it seems, for Cresco. So that being said, one to keep an eye on. I see why, it's down today. It's, of course, but that being said, I don't really think it's unexpected. So this to me is more, trading on emotion for me. But that being said, that's just my personal take on this. Another big number for you, 33%. What does that mean? 33%, y'all. If you can guess, I'll throw you a free Benzinga hoodie. But 33% per the Toronto Sun is the amount of the market of Canada, the Canadian cannabis market, that is still controlled by drug dealers in the illicit market. So 33% there, still a massive number for a somewhat, I don't want to say aging industry. It's not that old, but they are one of the first. So that being said, last but not least, Virgin Islands becomes accessible. The governor of U.S. Virgin Islands signs into law the production, the manufacturing, and the start to roll downhill and getting a cannabis economy rolling there. So I think we ran through some news. I'm pretty proud of myself. That was a lot. And, again, subscribe to Benzinga Cannabis YouTube. We're just going to keep saying it today. With that being said, thank you, Gary, Change Agent, Cassidy, Mitchell. Really happy to have you guys here with us. We want your questions through this. We're going to start with Jason Vygotsky, CEO of PedalFast, who is a genius when it comes to brands. We're going to hear his insights in terms of CPG, what's happening in that industry, but drop your questions. We will absolutely moderate them and thrilled to include you guys. I can speak, I promise, include you guys in the conversation. The gray market is too profitable to stop. I can't disagree with you there, Gary. It's an unfortunate reality, my friend. All right, Aaron Thomas, let's bring over Jason. Let's get started. There he is. There he is. Jason, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Elliot. How are you, man?
Good. It's been a bit. It's been a bit, man. Honestly, I think it's been a couple years since I've had the opportunity to get an update on what PedalFast is doing. It really seems recently to me that, you guys are rolling downhill, but I'd love to back up a little bit. Give us some insight for those that may not know. What does PedalFast do in cannabis?
Yeah, PedalFast is a different take on a distributor. We take the business model of really pure CPG in the food side of the business, really natural food. So companies like Acosta, Advantage Sales and Marketing, CA Fortune, they might call themselves national brokers or sales agencies. But that's the business model that PedalFast took, and it's proving out to be successful thus far, even in this climate. The biggest difference between, PedalFast, our business model, and what most people think of a distributor is we don't have the warehousing, the logistics, the inventory. We are really just a selling organization that is now nationwide and entering more and more states. So we represent a portfolio of 25 brands in California, which I'm sure we will get into and talk about that chit show. And then we'll get into, obviously Massachusetts we're in now, Arizona we're in, and we have a whole state rollout. But how we manage our salespeople, how we work with our brands, how we go to market, and really the internal workings of the organization is alcohol beverage 101. And so while we have a business model that replicates the natural food space, the way that we work internally would be very representative of how a Southern Wine and Spirits or a Breakthrough Beverage or where I came from, a Fedway Associates would operate more so than kind of the food and beverage space. So my background, as you may remember, I came from alcohol beverage a long time ago in New Jersey, about right after school. My dad worked in that space his whole life, so that was what second nature to me. And then I got into the natural food space and built a beef jerky company, of all things, which was great. And then I got into cannabis 6 years ago, and I have been riding the ups and treading water during the downs, and making sure that, you know, you don't get too high and you don't get too low, no pun intended.
So I have to preface this question by saying, I mean, I think you did the right thing here, but why choose the asset light model in distribution? Is it just the accessibility to it? Or is it just the entering into a new industry? I'm just curious.
Well, I might have a little bit of PTSD. So I was the president of Cushco Holdings for a little while, and which is now Green Lane. And just our challenges with inventory and accounts receivable was, you know, this was 3, 4, 5 years ago when I was there. And those challenges, you know, really resonated with me. And in cannabis, there is no stability. There is no regulation that forces people to pay. We had a party the other day because we actually had a contract that held up, right? Literally, me and my partner Arun were like dancing because we had a contract that finally held up in cannabis. So without the normalcy of buying or a retailer buying from you and actually being able to collect on that legally or being forced to be paid by regulation, I wanted to be as light as possible around that. And then secondly, I have no idea what this is going to look like in 5 years and 10 years and 20 years. I mean, I can make some guesses. We can all make guesses, but nobody really knows. And I don't know that I want to plant my flag as far as where our warehousing and our logistical operation would be right now, because I don't want to change it 20 times. So right now we partner with warehousing and logistical companies across the country. We have a great partner in Nabis in California, a great partner in Consensus Holdings in Arizona, they're going to kill me. I forget their name. My guys up in Massachusetts, which I will remember their name here shortly. We have a great partner as well. And Eagle Eye Distribution. We have a great partner in Massachusetts. So I let them do that heavy lift, and I thank them for doing that heavy lift. And then we go and sell that weed into retailers. And I always tell people, when I came into the space, I saw brands get into MedMen. And I always asked, when you get into MedMen, are you calling your salesperson and giving them a high five, or are you calling the delivery driver and thanking them? It's always the salesperson for getting you in, right? So that's all the value. That's what we're focused on. And right now, it's hard enough in cannabis to just do one thing right. So we want to just do this right and better than everybody else. And I think there's a lot of value to be had if we can say, hey, we can get you into these retailers with our relationships and the way that we operate.
Now, you know, this seems, I'm making an assumption here, so I could very much be wrong, but I'm curious, you know, when in cannabis, obviously there's somewhat of a ceiling to, you know, how big of a footprint some of these brands can reach in certain, I will say not brands, but maybe some of the physical product can reach in a state. So with that being said, what's the growth opportunity with each account here? You know, do you have to have a plethora of accounts to really grow your business model? Or is this something where, you know, similar to a Cushco, you could go into different states and be taken by people you work with on the product and brand side?
Yeah, I heard you mention Wana earlier. I have a great relationship with Eric and Nancy and Joe, the whole team there. And, you know, they have gone wide very quickly. They've been able to get in the states and get partnerships, and the professionalism that they have on their side works very well with the professionalism of the operators that they have. So you certainly can get all across the country, but it's very redundant and duplicative as far as you have to do it over and over and over again. So you don't get economies of scale that you may get if there was the ability to go across state lines, but you certainly can get across the country. And then within each within each state, you know, yeah, there is a ceiling, and the ceiling is typically dictated by regulation and how quickly they're going to roll out retail. You know, the biggest problem we see right now is every state pretty much has done it. Let's roll out all of these cultivation licenses, get this infrastructure built. but then they don't force the cities to adopt the retailer license. So you're left with an abundance of cannabis, right? And no retail to go sell it in. I always say there's 18,000 liquor stores in the state of California. 18,000. You can literally point in any direction and you can probably walk to a liquor store. There is 1,000 retail licenses, right? And right now I would tell you there's probably 400 retailers that I would actually sell to. And out of those 400, there's probably 50% of them that I'm actually confident would pay the bills. So the retail landscape is actually shrinking because of this oversupply and all the regulation challenges in the state of California. If we are going to affect the gray market, and if we are going to see that ceiling rise, we need to see more retail come on board in these states. I live in Laguna Beach. I need to drive 40 minutes in Orange County to get legal weed.
Wow. Right? Wow.
40 minutes. Like,
wow.
Happening. Now I can get delivery and I know how to do that, but the average person does not. Mm-hmm. So 40 minutes is not going to get it done.
That's shocking to me.
Get this. So I just said there's 1,000 licenses in California. There's about 400 that I would tell you, like, you can go sell to.
Mm-hmm.
In Denver, there's 300 retail licenses. They did it right. Right. There's not a huge black market problem in Denver alone, because everywhere you turn, there is going to be cannabis shops that you can go into.
Very interesting. So you are a fan of this unlimited license model in a broad sense. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but in that sense.
I don't
sense.
Want my MSO friends to hate me, but yeah. Vertical integration is what is killing cannabis. Everybody sees this dream, and it is a pipe dream of I'm going to do everything, and we're going to be able to be a retailer and a grower and a distributor and a brand builder and this and that. Guess what? Everybody does it okay at best, right? Most of the time they do a poor job in every single vertical because they're undercapitalized and you're just not able to do it. So I think vertical integration is the biggest problem that we have in the space. I would rather see each, whatever lane you want to play in, go play in that lane and do it well. I always tell my team, like, the reason we're all here is opportunity, right? And there is opportunity galore. But the reason that most people fail is because of opportunity, and we're all trying to do too much, right? The more I say no, typically the better off PedalFast does.
Wow. That's actually, we have a great comment in the chat. Survival of the fittest is what it's turning into in this very Darwinistic right now, in that sense.
Right now, you better have a really strong balance sheet, or you better have really, really strong investors. And one of the things that I'm most proud of is our investor base that we have: WGD Capital, Arcadian Capital, Merida Capital.
Wow.
We have Alcohol Beverage on our cap table. I can't mention the name, but we
come
are.
Come on, Jason. Come on. Yeah, you can't.
we've got a really, really nice cap table. We're all swimming in the boat together, or swimming down the same lane together, working together through this. And I always say, like, when things are good, it's easy to raise money.
Mm-hmm.
When things are tough, you get to see who the real investors are. And I'll tell you that WGD and Arcadian and Merida, you know, if you're looking to raise money, that's who you should be calling, because they're the best.
Amen. I love all three of them. Honestly, you have a heck of an investor base there. So we could probably talk about CPG with you literally all day. But that being said, let's go a little bit more specific, since you have a background in beverage. You know, talk a little bit about where we are in, you know, since you have distribution knowledge, you have network knowledge, retail seems to not be set up for it yet, right? So when does beverage actually start to penetrate the market at a heavier level?
So if you're in the normal CPG space, you typically will look at your sales channels. Right. You got drug, which would be like CVS and Rite Aid. You've got convenience, which is like your Circle K's of the world. Right. Your gas stations. You got grocery, which is obvious. When you rank all of those, typically for most brands, like, convenience is the lowest on the list, because you're not going to buying a whole lot of food or beverages. You're buying one. Right. If you're going into CVS, or two, typically if you're going to a grocery store, you're going to stock up. Well, if you rank those like 1, 2, and 3 or 4, dispensary would be like 27th down below on the list, okay, for beverage. stores don't have cold boxes. You can't, there's always the saying in alcohol beverage, stack them high and let them fly, right? You can't stack anything. You're lucky to even be able to see the product in a dispensary, right? So if you could have a perfect storm of things going against you in the beverage channel, right? You have it in dispensary retail for beverages. With that said, I believe in the category. I think it's going to be a big success long term. It's just a matter of when can you have these beverages in a normal channel. That's anybody's guess. It's probably, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road. But I would argue that if Wonder or Can, probably two of the leaders, were in grocery, they would be top five beverages, period, across the
industry. I completely agree with you. Can, one of my favorite products, period. Absolutely. In this industry. I mean, I had it for the first time in Las Vegas this past year because I don't live anywhere close to being accessible to cannabis in Raleigh, North Carolina. But that being said, I finally had Can, and I sent a note to Luke and Jake, and I was like, I hope you don't hate me for now just having it, but good job, guys. Like, great job with this. I'd love to do the same with Wonder. That sounds awesome. But my friend, we're coming to the end of our time here. So I want to ask, you know, CPG, I mean, we're baby steps, right? We're at the infantile stage, or do you see something else? I mean, you have such a vast knowledge here in terms of building, you know, brand footprints. Is somebody doing it the right way? Maybe in your network, who you work with, or just in general, as a whole, what brand sticks out to you as cannabis, other cannabis companies should take note?
I think Can is doing it the right way, especially from a marketing standpoint. You know, it's unfortunate that there is a ceiling on just how much revenue that type of product can get in the space. When I look at, you know, products around the country, obviously California, I know more than most, but 710 Labs is I think one of the best. And really one of the biggest challenges in this space is that everybody is under unbelievable amounts of pressure to get revenue quickly. Investors are forcing it upon you, right? Your own business model is forcing it upon you. And there is this race to capture revenue. And that makes people and brands do really stupid things like discounts and just giving away product and lowering your prices. And nobody's even asking for it. You're just lowering it. And when I look at 710 Labs, when I look at Awana, right, I see brand builders that have done it the right way. They have stuck to their guns, right? And they're not chasing. They don't care if they are the largest, right? But they're going to be the best and they're going to do it the right way. So when we talk to brands, we want to see the right activity. We want to be realistic with expectations, right? And we want to make sure that we are handling distributor activity, but we can't be a great distributor unless we have brands doing brand activity. And I think those two brands are really doing a good job.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Actually, we'll get this question in from the chat. Gary Schwartz, do you advertise? If so, where?
PedalFest. I mean, we have a website, but I mean, PedalFest is really, it's all word of mouth. I mean, some of our success stories of growing brands in California has certainly helped. You know, I don't know if the question is about do brands advertise, but we, you know, right now we believe all of your, if you're a brand, all of your activity should be in the retail with kind of field and trade type of activity, demo activity, and PedalFest does a lot of that for our brands as well. Unfortunately, TV ads, the billboards, the normal playbook that a typical CPG brand would have, it's just really tough to get away with that, even social media. So no, it's mostly word of mouth, and you know how it is. After 6 years of being in the space, I know who's real, I know who's fake. I don't have to waste my time with any pretenders because we already know who the jokers are. Unfortunately, there's a lot of them out there, but this is not a cannabis recession. It is a correction, and I look forward to all those jokers being out of the way so the real brand builders and the real players can go and win together.
I love it when guests just give me a headline. It's such a great thing. Jason, appreciate you, my friend. Thank you for being here. Hopefully we see you in Miami in April. Talk more about CPG and brands. We're going to be doing it a lot, my friend. But until then, be well, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Ellie.
Thanks. Awesome, y'all. Great discussion. Thank you again, Jason Vygotsky, CEO of PedalFest, for being here. Former president of a major compliance packaging company in Cushco, which, of course, acquired by Greenlane, Brand Builder, Brand King, whatever you want to refer to them as. But that being said, just an immense amount of knowledge, and we much appreciate him being here. Thank you all so much for your questions and comments in the chat. I didn't get to mention all of them, but Gary, Change Agent, Joe, Cassidy, really appreciate everybody tuning in. We got one more. Stay tuned. And honestly, I've been trying to talk to her for ages, and I am so thrilled that we finally get Jill Ellsworth, CEO and founder of Willow Industries, back on the show. Hello, hello, Jill. I feel like we've been dancing around finally this for a while, and I'm pumped. I'm so excited because it's been a long time since we've been able to chat, but how are you?
I'm so good. Good to see you.
You too. You too.
I've seen you for like such a short amount of time in Vegas. It was like, oh.
Well, to be fair to the audience, y'all, we tried to do this in Las Vegas during MJ Biz, and I was late. So my apologies.
You, so it's definitely not your fault.
Well, Jill, we really appreciate you joining us. And I'm thrilled to dive in here and just, you know, reconnect with Willow. You guys have been innovative in what you do for so long. So let's just do a quick refresher here on what Willow does in cannabis.
We clean weed. So we invented a technology called the Willow Pure that uses ozone gas to get rid of microbials on cannabis, finished cannabis. So dried, cured, trimmed flower, we utilize ozone gas in a fully contained system to get rid of microbials, which would be mold, yeast, E. coli, salmonella, bacteria, aspergillus, anything that could compromise the consumer. And of course, you know, make a cultivator fail testing, we can get rid of that.
Interesting. Are you, this is, I think, a broader question than what I mean, but I don't know how else to ask this. Are you required by governments, by policymakers for these companies to sell their product?
No, not yet. That will happen. It's all voluntary. But it's really hard as a commercial grower, it's really hard to pass compliance testing, which is in every single state, depending on severity. You know, some states are more intense than others, but cultivators typically cannot pass testing without a technology to help them ensure the product is clean. So it's not mandated by any regulatory agency just yet. But if we see this industry following historic ones like food and beverage that the FDA oversees, they're going to require a kill step. And, you know, that's what we do at Willow is provide a kill step to cannabis.
Okay. Well, that's super interesting. And they need to get on the ball and just require Willow Industries. That's all we need.
It's a real.
Yeah. I think they should require Willow Industries in every state. That said, let's dive in a little deeper, and I'm a little scared. What do you see on this weed prior to you cleaning it?
Oh, Lord. You know what? I thought it was really interesting what the previous guest, Jason, said, is that this is a correction, and this will correct and get rid of essentially bad players in the industry. And so, you know, what we see when we go into a cultivation and our we do full microbial assessments when we get there before we onboard our technology, and the amount of contamination that we see where it's coming from is really alarming. But the ones that are wanting, that are willing to make the changes, that want to get rid of, you know, any sort of contamination on flower, are the ones that will get through this correction. And those that don't care about the consumer, don't care about the product, just want to make a quick buck, I mean, they will no longer cease to exist. So yeah, I mean, we see really dirty flower. I mean, for instance, we were at this cultivation in Michigan, and I mean, there's E. coli all over it.
Oh no.
And you know, and that's a lot of the times when we see that, that's where we say, like, this is a no. We're not interested in, you know, being a partner with you because it's so far gone and you have so much to work on upstream that you need to take the time to fix the issues, and then you can bring in this type of technology.
So, I mean, Lord, so I'd love to understand how they fix that issue, but I feel like we might be here all day. So let's jump ahead a little bit. What kind of assurances do you give, like, the consumer? How can consumers understand, okay, this is cleaned? I know there's no E. coli on this.
You know, again, it's so early on. Mm-hmm. There aren't assurances to consumers because the cultivation side, the regulatory side, they have not decided it's important to tell consumers about this. I mean, you assume as a cannabis consumer that if a product is on the shelf, it's clean. And yes, it is clean because it has passed testing. But I mean, the fact of the matter is when you go into a grocery store, you know the processes that have happened to that product to ensure that you're safe. It says on your milk, it's been pasteurized, but you don't know what's happened to your cannabis. And so we champion for more consumer awareness and labeling. And, you know, it's interesting, it's happening in Nevada, but, you know, there's a lot of hiccups around that. I think it's a really scary concept for cultivators to start divulging this info to consumers because they actually don't really know what they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it brings up a lot of concerns like, well, I didn't know weed was moldy. Why is weed moldy? What's mold doing on my weed? And so then it's like, okay, well, here's the deal. All cannabis has mold. This is why, you know, it's a lot of education.
Yeah, Lord, yes. We have a long way to go there. So let's talk about your tech. Is it specifically mint for like cannabis flower, marijuana flower, or other plants? Like, what can you use your technology for?
It was designed specifically for marijuana. We could use it on hemp, of course, but 100% of our customers are marijuana cultivators.
So I'd love your input on this, just as a perspective. Obviously, there's been a recent surge, especially in states where marijuana is not accessible, of Delta 8 and other, you know, sorts of synthetic cannabinoids. So when you look at those, you don't really know what you're consuming. I mean, there have been, you know, random tests of mold, and I think metals out the wazoo on this. So, I mean, do you foresee that market being on the tail of cannabis with somebody that you will clean one day? I'm just curious your thoughts on Delta 8. Obviously, it's not a regulated substance, but where do you see the consumption of that going, and what can consumers expect of that type of consumable?
I think it's a great question, and it's a big concern for this industry. I'm personally very concerned about Delta 8 because as an uneducated consumer, if an uneducated consumer went into a gas station and saw CBD that has Delta 8 or whatever it's labeled as, and you just assume it's what you've heard, and then it ends up being incredibly intoxicating. I mean, you know, what's the health and legal ramifications here? So, I mean, we need more understanding around it, but there needs to be more regulation. Like, to be quite honest, I don't think that product should be on the market, and it shouldn't be in a market that's a grocery store or a gas station where it's accessible Amen. To any age.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't have said it better. So, I mean, when you look at the options to cannabis companies, I mean, can you help us understand what options do they have right now to test, to get cleaned? I'm just curious, you know, if you could give us more of a broad picture around what companies are quote unquote doing to make sure the product is safe.
Yeah. So it's been interesting to see this niche evolve. I mean, we started this 7 years ago and we're the only ones doing this. So it's been fascinating to see how it's evolved. Now outside of Ozone, and we're really the only ozone player in the industry, cultivators are using irradiation. So that's one option. Radio frequency, which is similar to, you know, microwave type technology, hydrogen peroxide, vaporized hydrogen peroxide. And I think that's about it. So, you know, there's kind of four bigger categories of different types of technology that cultivators are utilizing now.
So why ozone? Out of curiosity.
Well, so ozone is organic. So it's USDA, FDA recognized as organic.
We all love that word. Love organic here.
I know. It's definitely a gentler option than I think some of the other ones that I mentioned. I think ozone's incredible. It's powerful. It's not destructive to the flower. It is, it's a treatment that really anyone can utilize within the cultivation. We've made the machine super safe. I'm just a big proponent of it.
Can you give us a little sense? I mean, this may mirror a question maybe about your own company performance, but at growth year over year, you know, in terms of companies cleaning their weed. I mean, is at least trending the right direction?
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's amazing. Like I said earlier, commercial cultivators really cannot pass testing without some sort of tech, some sort of kill step, decontamination tech. So it's been amazing to see the growth over the years that we've been in business, our company specifically, but also the other technologies. It's really incredible because there is a need for it. We always believe the need is there. Clean cannabis is a necessity, but also like employing a kill step in your cultivation to ensure your product's clean for all types of consumers, immunocompromised, medical, anything, recreational, is utmost important and will be required one day.
So what is, just to follow up on your point a couple questions ago, what does organic weed mean? What is it? It seems it could just be a keyword in this instance, which I mean, maybe it's not, but I'd love to get a definition from somebody who is actually doing it.
Well, I don't even know if organic weed exists right now. Because you have, I think it does. I think there are some certifying bodies that do certify, say, okay, this is organic, but it's your growing processes and ensuring that anything that touches the flower or touches the plant is deemed organic. So, you know, what are all of your inputs, your water, your soil, your nutrients, and then, you know, do you use a kill step at the end? Is that considered organic, especially on the food side? But again, I think we're really early on in like saying this is organic weed. And is there a consumer base for that? Like, I don't know how you buy food. I move towards more organic choices. Mm-hmm.
I do too, for sure. Okay.
Perfect. So, I mean, you know, I think at some point we're going to be like, oh, okay, this is definitely organic flower.
Who will deem that? Will it be you? I'm just curious. Is it the FDA?
No, it definitely won't be us. I would imagine it would be the FDA.
Mm-hmm. Like the USDA or one of those like, A's.
Yeah. I mean, when they come into the space, which they will, we all know that, they will be the ones, the certifying bodies typically.
So by definition, synthetic, it can't be that.
No.
Yeah. So we're at a disadvantage all the way around if you're selling some of these minor cannabinoids over here.
I think the answer would be no, but that's actually a good question. I may not know the answer to.
I would think it's not. Because, I mean, I'm on the same boat as you in this sense. In the chat, if you guys have any questions or thoughts on that, please let us know. But I can't imagine you could ever consider that organic. And I feel like I think I'm some spiritual deity is in agreement with me. if you're watching right now, the sun is intruding on my picture again. But that being said, I can't imagine it would be possible. And I don't think Americans, just in the weirdly, you know, a contradictive society we live in, would lean toward that. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm rambling now. I'm just trying to figure it out.
You're right. It's also, I mean, if we're going to compare this to food, do you eat non-GMO? Like, is that also something to you gravitate towards? I know it's like a little different, but if we're comparing like GMO synthetic to like, you know, that comparison, I don't know.
So do companies, are they public about working with you? I'm curious. I mean, are you able to tell us they're not?
No, to my point earlier, no one wants to admit it. And you know what? We were very vocal about why you should be upfront to your consumers of like, we've taken all the measures to ensure that you, our consumer, are safe. That it is.
I would
like,
love to know.
Right?
I would love to know. I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm so sorry.
No. It is. I think this has been myself and my team are a huge frustration because so many people work with so many companies and not one will say, you know what, this is what we do because we care and we want you to know.
I get why. I think, I think for me, it's an extra source of trust, you know, and you know, if you pass a test from a leading tech, provider of this service in Willow Industries, and I trust Willow, then I'm going to trust the product that comes out of Willow.
Yes, I hope.
I'm just giving you marketing fodder here, I hope. But
I love it. My whole team's listening, so they're taking furious notes. Elliot knows. What's up? it's really challenging because we want to like tell everyone like, look, this is what we do. And these are the companies that are like really serious about it. But again, does it open a can of worms for consumers right now? Yes. I think that's how everyone views it.
Interesting. Okay. So as we wrap up here, give us a little insight about what we can look for from Willow. I mean, are you still innovating your technology? Are you still looking for that next way to make cannabis flower that's that much safer, that much cleaner? Like, what are you all doing right now?
We are, just to your point, absolutely. We continually are innovating. So we have a new product within our current system, our Willow Pure 360, coming out probably in the next month or two. That's going to make it that much more amazing and better. And so we'll talk about that when it's ready. But yes, we are constantly trying to improve our technology, improve our kill rate, make our customers happy. So that's what we do here. And that's what we strive to do, continue to double down and improve what we already do really well.
Fantastic. And then I guess, I mean, what's your thought right now? There's a lot of negative sentiment in the year, right? You know, everybody in cannabis, I heard, was one of two, just really, really pissed at politicians or business as usual. And just kind of like, yeah, it would have been great, but like, whatever. In 2023, do you see any major catalyst for, you know, investors, consumers to get excited about cannabis?
I mean, if we as a industry continue to innovate and find ways to attract more consumers, new consumers, I think that's going to continue to drive adoption. But I feel like this year it's like continue to do what you do best and focus. And to what Jason said earlier, I mean, like, have a healthy balance sheet. You want to ensure that like you are continuing to grow, but within the parameters of where our industry is right now. I mean, I was like bummed. Last year was hard, but I feel excited about, you know, this correction and that like all the good players will continue to rise.
Love that. I love optimism. Hits me in the heart, Jill. I appreciate that. Jill Ellsworth, CEO, co-founder of Willow Industries. I'm very excited to see how you are making this space better. You are making these operators better. You're making cannabis better. So thank you so much for what you're doing and for, you know, getting these guys on the right track here. We appreciate you. And we look forward to having you back on. And I will be on time next time.
Oh, my God. You're the best. And I'll see you. I'm coming to Miami. I've already booked.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. So you can meet Jill in person, everybody. Everybody in the chat, bzcannabis.com. Book your rooms now. Get your tickets now. Get to Miami. You can meet Jill and talk to her about her innovative, amazing tech in person. But thank you again, Jill. Really appreciate your time and thrilled to have you on. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, you're the best. Bye.
Awesome. Awesome guests today. Honestly, Jason dropped some knowledge bombs. Jill was dropping knowledge bombs. I didn't think I was going to like it first, but I mean, I'm encouraged now leaving that conversation. Honestly, really, really great conversations. Thank you to both of them for joining us. Thank you again, Change Agent, David, Gary, Joe, everybody in the chat. Cassidy, really appreciate everybody. Tune in again Tuesday and Thursday for Eastern Time. Every Tuesday and Thursday in March, we are specifically highlighting women leaders. We are going to represent Women's History Month and make sure we bring you the best women leaders in cannabis. And I could not be more excited for that. But in February and the end of January, we have so many more interviews for you. So stay tuned. Subscribe to this channel on Benzinga Cannabis YouTube, benzinga.com/cannabis for all your news throughout the day. Probably too many more plugs for me to go through, but we just appreciate you all tuning in. And we will see you again Tuesday at 4 Eastern time for another great interview. Until then, y'all.